And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme. Today's theme is change. My first guest wants to turn the publishing industry on its head. We discussed his new publishing paradigm, Wubbit.com. My next guest is out to change your mind. He's a message consultant for some of the highest profile cases in America. He'll show us the 27 powers of persuasion to seduce audiences and win allies. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Chris St. Hilaire is an award-winning message strategist who has developed communications programs for some of the nation's most powerful corporations, legal teams, politicians, including the Political Action Committee behind Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's historic victory. The first marketeer in the courtroom, Chris is the founder of Jury Impact, a national jury consulting firm, and M4 Strategies, a California-based messaging firm that specializes in influencing public policy. Chris's persuasion advice has been featured in Investor's Business Daily and also has been provided legal and political commentary at USA Today and on national news broadcasts at NBC, C-SPAN, and Fox News. Chris holds a BA in speech communications from California State University at Fullerton. By the way, Chris, that's where my wife graduated. And he lives in Long Beach, California with his wife and two sons. Chris, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good, Billy. How's it going?
Well, it is great and thankful to have you on the show. Love having thought leaders like you on the show to talk about what they know. Now, let's jump into it, shall we? You've made a career out of studying and teaching persuasion. Do you think that people can learn to be good persuaders, or is it an inborn gift?
You know, I think it's both. It's both an art and a craft. And you know, the art comes from someplace within us. You'll meet people that are naturally persuasive. It's like a great athlete. They're going to have some ability, but over years, you have to hone that ability. So whatever your ability is going in, you can learn the craft. You can learn the techniques. You can learn a lot of the things that the best persuaders do, sometimes naturally and sometimes learned, and you can become much more persuasive whomever you are.
All right, so you can learn the techniques, which is good to know. But persuasion recently, Chris, has gotten a bad rap, and especially in the minds of many people. Persuasion's associated with arm twisting, forcing somebody to do something that they don't want to do, which is very negative in that. So let me ask you this question. Give us a more workable definition of what you think persuasion is, and then why should everybody want to learn to be persuasive?
You know, when I set out writing the book a few years ago, I wanted to go someplace where everybody had an opinion. So I went straight to New York City and I did focus groups.
Uh-huh.
And what I found that persuasion did get a bad rap. People saw it as coercion or manipulation. And in fact, real persuasion is anything but that. Real persuasion is building consensus from conflict or nothing at all. And so getting everyone marching the same direction, bringing everyone together and believing something and uniting people is a positive. And so I'm really on a mission to change the way a lot of people view persuasion and help them see it for what it is, something we're involved in every day, something we do whether we know it or not. We're always either trying to be persuaded or trying to be persuasive. And so my goal is to change how people view persuasion and give it a more positive context.
Well, you've given it a more positive spin just by saying that it is collaborative, that it's working towards a mutual goal. It's not a zero-sum game. I win, you lose, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, words matter. Words mean things. And so if you know, 76% of America opposes welfare, but roughly the same numbers support a social safety net. The language that you use matters. And the concepts are similar, but the words evoke images. And your ability to control that language and your ability to shape that debate will really determine your success as a persuader.
And I want to come back to that, Chris, in just a few minutes, because in your book you write that managing opposition by giving it nothing to oppose is your cornerstone there. And I want to come back and talk in more depth. But before we do, I want to really conceptualize this for my listeners. So I'm going to give you a real-world example. Persuasion doesn't mean that you're running for president necessarily, or even in the case of Arnold Schwarzenegger running for governor. It can, and it doesn't have to be in business either. It can just be real-world stuff. So here's the real-world example. A mom and a child are in line at the grocery store. Child wants some candy. Mom doesn't want to give the child candy. The child is raising its voice to get what it wants, knowing that raising its voice is going to embarrass the mother in a public place. All right, so from the mother's perspective, how can she persuade the child not to have the candy?
You know what's fascinating, and I do a lot of interviews around the country, is everyone brings up a parent-child relationship, because children are many times the most difficult and the ones you're trying to convince long-term, because it's the most, you know, they're the ones most important to you in your lives.
Mm.
And not reacting. You know, when a child's yelling and a parent starts yelling back, you're teaching that child long-term that there's value in yelling, and they're getting a reaction from you. But when you lower your voice and you don't give in to their demands, but you lower your voice and you explain to them that there are consequences to behavior and that yelling won't be tolerated, and then they don't get what they want. Children learn faster than anyone. But too often when I see these downgrades, even if it's a spouse, you know, when one yells, the other gets a reaction. And really that anger needs something to oppose in order to continue that anger. And so when you don't oppose it, when you let it die of its own volition, it actually in the long term dissipates, it disappears.
All right, Chris, but I'm going to come back to your definition of persuasion, which is more of a win-win sort of situation. In that example, then it's a zero-sum game. The child either gets the candy or doesn't get the candy. Well, is there another way that you can frame that so it's less of a zero-sum game?
Well, I'm not going to agree that it's a zero-sum game.
Okay.
Mean, the fact is, long-term, that's in the child's best interest. But, you know, a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old is not in a position to define what their best interest is at that point in life. Their best interest is to get the gum and chew the gum and so they can get more gum. But, you know, long-term best interest, a win-win situation, is a healthy parent and a healthy child.
All right. Okay, that's very well said and certainly appealing to the parent and all of us. But now I'm going to put the shoe on the other foot. From the child's perspective, how can the child convince the mother to have the candy?
Well, I don't want to spend the... I'll give you two examples.
Okay.
But I don't want to spend the whole time talking about a parent-child. I think this is more in the community, whether you're working with the PTA, whether you're working in a business, or whether you're running for office. But I'll give you two examples if I'm the child. And one is choice, fairness, and accountability, the three most popular words in the English language. And I'd challenge your listeners to go home and count how many times your child uses the term "that's not fair" in a week. I got to about 72 and I quit with my two children. But what you'll find is that if I'm the child and you want to talk about fairness, you can use an example and say, well, the fair thing to do would be to, if I eat my meal, can I have gum? You know, this gum, 3 out of 4 dentists prefer this gum. Use a couple of numbers. And or you can say, yesterday my brother got this same pack of chewing gum. Would it be fair to give me that?
Oh, good. You know,
so I think using language to evoke images, using a couple of numbers, and then demonstrating, you know, fairness of situations, because it's something we all strive for, is important and useful and helpful.
We're talking to the unflappable Chris St. Hilaire. His latest book, 27 Powers of Persuasion, Simple Strategies to Seduce Audiences and Win Allies. And so, Chris, I've got to ask you, 27 Powers of Persuasion, why not 19? Why not 30? You know, well, let's start with that. Why not 19? Why not 30?
Well, because 26 wasn't enough and 28 was too many. But, you know, what I did in all candor was take my experience. I've worked in politics on national campaigns for the last 20 years. I've worked in courtrooms on some very high-profile trials, and I work with corporations on their messaging. And what I did was take the tools that could be used in all three industries, which, when you think about it, really are the three persuasion industries. And I took tools that would apply to all of those things and life, because I wanted to make this a very practical book. Too many books are on persuasion, are about clinical data and studies, and they're by clinicians or professors. I wanted to make this book about real-world situations and give people practical advice that they could use every single day.
All right, Chris, now I'm going to put you on the spot. Of the 27 powers of persuasion in your book, which one is the most useful in daily life, if you have to pick just one?
You know, and I got to excuse myself, I have a bit of a cold. I'm home today, as you know. But some of the chapters are philosophical and some are very practical. So let me give you one of the first chapters, which is understanding the ego. And then I'll try and give you some practical context to that.
Good.
Everybody has an ego. The Eastern view of the ego says that, you know, we're all united, we're all the same, and underneath there's the spirit within us that understands that. And then we have the ego that tells us to separate ourselves, to be different, to be unique, drive a nicer car, own a nicer house, date more men or women, depending on who you are. And so it would make lots of money and make your mark in this world. And there's always a struggle between those two philosophies going on inside of us. And so we all know someone who, when he's speaking, he says, "Let me tell you how it is." That's always going to get a negative reaction. Stepping on their ego, he's telling them that he knows something they don't and that no further information is needed. Because he knows how it is, and he's going to tell you that will always get opposition, and that'll never create consensus. That'll never create a leader. So the piece of practical advice I would give is to understand that, recognize that, and use the term when you're about to give your opinion, "from my perspective." "From my perspective" will open doors and will get your opinion heard more. I can't guarantee that if it's not a good opinion, it's going to persuade people, but when you have a good opinion, half the battle is getting people to hear it. And so saying "from my perspective" allows other people to have a perspective too. And it tells them innately that I know you have an opinion, here's mine. And it gets it heard more, and it will inevitably make you that much more persuasive when you do have a good idea.
All right, we're talking to Chris St. Hilaire, everybody, the 27 Powers of Persuasion. And in that answer alone, Chris, there was a lot of great information. But the point I want to bring out is that in your book, you weave a lot of Buddhist principles throughout the text of your book. Why did you decide to do this, and how does it add to the advice that you're giving in the book?
You know, whether you're, you know, Christian, Jewish, a Muslim, or Hindu, or any or no religion at all, what I find is that the philosophies of Buddhism really resonate, and they're applicable to really any religion. But for me, because I'm Buddhist, it was just a natural fit. It had a natural feel to it, and I think that the principles within it cut across all religions, and really gave the book a special flavor.
It does. It gives it that oriental, that feel to it that adds something that you don't get in other books, as you say, on the topic of persuasion. We're talking to Chris Hilaire, 27 Powers of Persuasion, Simple Strategies to Seduce Audiences and Win Allies. So I'm going to ask you, Chris, can you give us some success stories of people that you've either trained or students that you've had that they've used persuasion to achieve their goals?
Well, I can give you a statistic, and in my book you'll see a chapter on using numbers. I always say 88% of Americans will believe any made-up statistic. And, as you can see, that there was some sarcasm there. But people will remember numbers, and so I like to give numbers when I'm providing examples. And you know, for our cases that go to trial, and we interview about 2,000 people a year. Last year, we were in 33 states. And we spend at least 2 hours with 12 people to 24 people a day, 3 to 5 days a week, and you learn things. And so the cases that we've had go to trial, and now there are hundreds of them, we have a 94% rate of victory for our clients.
Wow, 94% victory rate. I mean, that's incredible in any industry. That'll get you in the Hall of Fame if you're in any sport. So that's incredible, Chris.
Well, and we don't. You know, we work with a lot of very talented attorneys. So you know, we're proud to be a small part of the victory. But I do think the information that we provide it really helps our clients achieve victories. And in some of the cases, I'm sure you've heard about.
Without a doubt, but I don't want you to breach client confidentiality and all that kind of stuff. So let me turn my attention to the 27 powers that you've got listed in your book, the 27 Powers of Persuasion. One that I found most interesting is learn how to use silence. And I find it interesting because in radio, silence is death. You know, but to the person who is speaking, a pause may seem like confusion or befuddlement to them, but to the listener, however, a pause can seem thoughtful. So talk to me about using silence. How does that help to make you more persuasive?
Well, you're absolutely right. And the media, reporters especially, are experts at using silence. And when I would do, when I was speaking on behalf of clients in the past, I learned very quickly to be comfortable with silence. Because what they'll do is they'll let your answer sit for 4 or 5 seconds. And what people do is that when they're answering a question, the first thing they'll do is tell you what they think you want to hear. And the second thing they'll do is tell you what they think they should say. And then if you let the silence sit, a third phenomenon will happen, which is they'll tell you what they really think, which is what you've been trying to get at since the beginning.
Oh, that right there is worth the price of admission. That is great stuff. Well, I told you that we'd return back to this later in the interview, and I want to come back to that because one of the chapters in your book is managing opposition by giving it nothing to oppose. What do you mean by that?
You know, what happens in meetings, and this is especially applicable in meetings where there's more than two people, but when I first started my career in politics, I'd be sitting in a meeting of 6 or 7 people, and there's always one. You know, I wouldn't say always. Many times there's one person in there who gets on their soapbox and they want to tell you how it is. And so if there's disagreement in a meeting, they will be the ones to go off. And if the one who loses their cool or resorts to ad hominem, an attack, is the one losing the debate. And early in my career, you know, I wasn't experienced or mature enough, I think, not to oppose them. And what we need to realize when we're in these situations is that when you're noticing something, the rest of the meeting usually is as well. And so when someone resorts to an attack or something else, let it sit. Don't oppose it. Go back to the goal. And defining that goal is critical, by the way, which is another point I think important in the book. But letting that sit, letting others see who the real leader in the room is, pays enormous benefits in the long run.
It does. We're talking to Chris St. Hilaire, everybody. His book, The 27 Powers of Persuasion, Simple Strategies to Seduce Audiences and Win Allies. Chris, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, 27 Powers of Persuasion?
You know, if we say in marketing, if they can remember one thing about you, you're in a good position. But really, this book is a guide. It's meant to be read cover to cover the first time, but you can pick it up, go to chapter 17, or pick it up, go to chapter 12, and you're going to find a piece of advice that's going to be applicable to whatever persuasion situation you're in. And so, you know, what I'd ask people to remember is that life is about persuasion, that you're always persuading or somebody's trying to persuade you, and somebody's going to control that game of life. You should have the techniques, if not to control it yourself, to at least know what people are doing to you.
I love it. Life is about persuasion. I think that is great. Chris, what did you get out of writing the book?
You know, there's nothing, I think, as cathartic as writing a book. And it forces you to synthesize your philosophy. It forces you to be consistent in your approach. And so I actually, you know, in thinking it through, I've become a better articulator of the philosophy because it's been synthesized and put into 27 very consistent, useful chapters that flow, I believe at least, very, very well. And so, you know, I think I've become a better professional, but I've also gained a whole lot of respect for authors and what they go through because, you know, I think if a lot of us knew what we were getting into, we wouldn't attempt it in the first place. But that fits for just about everything in life, I think.
We've been talking to Chris St. Hilaire, everybody, author of the book, 27 Powers of Persuasion, Simple Strategies to Seduce Audiences and Win Allies. Chris, if people like the sound of your voice, they're interested in what you're saying, they want to learn more about you, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
You know, I'd send them to www.27, the numbers, powers of persuasion, .com. Or I would just have them go to Amazon or any Barnes & Noble or Borders Books and pick up a copy and send me an email, chris@27powersofpersuasion.com. I'd love to get your thoughts and know what you think.
All right, that's 27, the numerals, 27powersofpersuasion.com, or you can write chris@27powersofpersuasion.com. Chris, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for spending some time here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Billy the Brain, thank you so much.